Chapter 28. While Stanga's squad trained the Osei colonists who'd served as a local militia, as well as the men whom Brody had trained to use the Muir and Longmire's cache of rifles in the finer points of being a capable soldier, Reach got Sergeant Stanga's men billeted inside the colony. He had to consolidate some of the munitions and supplies to free up a section of a pod large enough to comfortably house the men, then ask the natives for help in providing furnishings, which mostly consisted of furs and rough pillows of homespun material stuffed with a cotton-like seed. But he wanted to see Leanna. He tried to tell himself it was because she was the one who'd made what was now happening possible, but he'd always been a believer in the concept of being true to oneself, and that meant admitting the truth. There were plenty of people in a better position to help him bring together the peoples of Camp Muir and Camp Ohio. She wasn't a military leader or a civilian leader. She had no particular influence on anyone, except perhaps her father, who was already fully on board. So why do I want to see her? Reach asked himself. The answer was obvious. Because you like the way you feel when you're around her. Add that to the list of things he hadn't expected to happen within 3 days of landing on Amir. But he was capable of adapting to the curveballs life threw at him. His goals were clear. First, ensure Camp Muir was defensible should Rupak attack again. Second, ensure the population was physically and mentally prepared to undertake a move when the time came. And third, foster a relationship between the military leadership that came in via the boon with the civilian population that would ultimately govern this planet. And yet ahead of all those goals, he decided to go see how Leanna was doing. He'd barely set off when Alexa changed his plans.
Hey there. You busy?
Always, Reach answered. What's up?
I've determined the location of the Rupak drone that was shot down by the Badger. It's inaccessible by vehicle without clearing a considerably dense forest and establishing an alpine road.
Roger that. So what does Captain Bosa want done?
I haven't told him yet because I want you to come with me to look for ourselves.
Come again?
Physically speaking, we are the most adept at quickly undertaking the difficulty of the march. Brody would likewise be able to make the journey, but I think he is best used in defense of the Osei people's camp. And I don't trust him to maintain noise discipline.
All right, but I still think we should get the okay from Captain Bosa.
That's fine. I just first need to be sure that you're willing to go on this mission with only the two of us. Captain Bosa will want to assign a squad, and quite frankly, I don't think we can wait for them to keep up with us.
Why not? What's the hurry? Alexa paused.
Because I believe hostile forces already en route to the objective, and it is paramount that we get there first.
All the more reason to inform the captain.
Which is exactly what I'm asking you to do, Alexa said. Captain Bosa will listen to you in a way that he won't listen to me. He can't help it.
The words made Reach feel a sudden chill. Why not?
Because of the way he sees you. The way I made him and everyone else see you. Everyone except Dr. Roman. Reach, you know they'll go along with whatever you say.
Reach shook his head. Alexa, that's not
ethical, legal, authorized by the government of the United States of America. I know.
I was going to say good, but yeah, that stuff too. Are you saying you entirely took away their free will? Whatever I say goes?
Nothing so extreme. It's only as I've said before. They have a level of admiration for you sufficient to follow you into battle and beyond. You're their George Washington, someone that can inspire courage and resolve in the face of extreme hardship and odds. I recognize they would need someone like that.
And you chose me. Gee, thanks.
General Washington was reluctant about his destiny, too.
I doubt old George had a morally gray AI tinkering with everyone's brains back in Virginia.
I'm not morally gray. I'm doing this for the good of the colony. It will save human lives.
But it was morally gray, no matter what Alexa said, and Reach was increasingly questioning whether or not he should reveal this information to Bosa and the others. But for the moment, he had a more pressing concern. Alexa, we've had more than a few fights with Rupak since arriving. They're not a threat unless they catch us by surprise. What does it matter if they get to the drone before us?
Because I don't think the soldiers you fought, are the ones en route. I believe there are two hostile forces on Amir.
Reach stopped in his tracks.
You'd better explain that.
Okay. The first group is the starving Rupak soldiers you've been fighting. I estimate they've been using a combination of cryo and raids to survive, but just barely. The second group, it's speculative. I can't say this with certainty, but someone has the capability of launching a drone outside of our AO and guiding it toward our sector. And I don't believe it was the ill-equipped Rupak we've seen, who seem limited to small arms and barely capable even with that.
That doesn't mean they don't possess a drone.
Like I said, it's speculative. But it's the explanation I'm leaning toward. In addition, something on this planet triggered the Boon's defensive sensors and got us scrambling to get on the ground. That, too, seems beyond the capabilities of the ragtag survivors we've encountered thus far.
She did have a point, but it's still only a theory, he said.
It is, which is why it's critical we find this drone. I think that will help us piece it all together.
Well, when you put it like that,
yeah, I'll talk to the captain for you.
Captain Bosa accepted Reach's recommendation of a two-person team consisting of himself and Alexa going in search of the drone. As Alexa had predicted, the captain first tried to push for a team of Rangers to accompany them, but his pushback was minimal, and Reach couldn't help but feel like he was manipulating the man. In the end, though, Alexa, through Reach, got her way. When she joined him in person, she was carrying an MG-338 machine gun, one of the weapons recovered from Brody's supply closet. Reach had equipped himself with one of the 6.8 spear rifles, which had much improved lethality relative to the 5.56 he'd arrived on planet with.
You ready? She asked.
Yeah, how about you? Reach answered, nodding at the machine gun cradled in her arms. Expecting trouble?
Nothing that 600 rounds a minute can't handle. Let's go.
And just like that, she was off at a run, disappearing into the forest, moving up a steep ridgeline as if it were no more than a gently sloping backyard hill. Reach took a step back and then launched himself forward. Then he built up speed and followed Alexa up and along a path of her own making. When he hit the slope, he could feel the shortening of his stride, but his muscles simply pushed harder, pumping his legs like pistons until he found himself climbing the hill as swiftly as he might have run a 40-yard dash over a flat track. They followed the top of the ridge, where the trees were spread farther apart and sprigs of rough amber grass eked out an existence in desolate crags. Alexa blazed a trail through the stark terrain, dodging trees and leaping up onto boulders the size of a single-story house. Reach followed her every move, surprising himself with how quickly he could cut from tree to tree, darting and changing directions like the most gifted of running backs, his momentum carrying him forward even as he shifted to the side. He jumped straight up, a leap of 20 feet if it was an inch, and landed atop a boulder right behind Alexa. It was unreal, and he wanted to pause and verify he was actually doing these things, but the android didn't slacken her pace, and Reach felt a sense of urgency as well. In time, he followed her down a mountainous slope that gave way to a savanna. Here, the trees were twisted, almost as though they corkscrewed down into the ground instead of up from it. And then the trees disappeared altogether, leaving nothing but waist-high grass of deep maroon stretching across the plain. They pushed on, heading toward another forest of white bark and black leaves. It had been nearly 2 hours since they'd left, and sweat was dripping from the back of Reach's neck and down between his shoulder blades. Yet he didn't feel tired. His feet weren't even sore. Finally, when they reached the tree line, Alexa slowed. She scampered up into a tree that was easily 10 meters in diameter and took a seat on a branch that was thicker than most trunks Reach had seen, her hanging feet obscured by the leaves beneath her.
"Come on up," she said.
Reach found his hands were more than capable of finding the necessary grip for him to muscle his way to the top, boots driving him upward as easily as a squirrel. He sat on the branch next to Alexa, breathing more heavily than normal, but not hard.
"I feel like I could have run forever."
"Not forever," Alexa said, smiling and kicking the air with alternate strokes like a child on a playground swing. "This is the optimal moment for you to rest. If we had kept going beyond this,
you would have required a much longer recovery period.
Reach nodded. Like sharpening an axe.
Alexa arched an eyebrow.
I'm not familiar.
I used to chop a lot of wood for my grandparents. Granddad said it built character. He grew up in Maine, then retired and got away from the cold by moving to Florida. Anyway, there's a point where the blade gets dull. You can still split the wood, but each chop requires more and more muscle on every swing. You're sort of breaking the wood apart instead of cutting it.
Reach tucked his knees up beneath his arms and balanced in a position that he was sure would have resulted in him falling head over heels if he'd tried it back on Earth. Red rays of evening shone through the black, leafy canopy.
I remember a time when I was maybe 14. He told me he was going to pay me $20 for every cord of wood I cut. But the catch was I had to subtract $10 for every cord he cut. There were 6 old pallets laid out, and Gramps was already pretty old. I figured he had maybe 2 pallets in him before Gran came out and reminded him about his heart. So that's an easy $100, right?
Alexa nodded.
Your math is inaccurate.
Whatever. So I get going. Boom, my first pallet is done, and he's still got a 2-foot-high stack on his. We keep chopping, and my second pallet is almost done. He's only at the halfway point of his first pallet, just whistling.
The sun starts to rise, and now it's getting hot. We're both just dripping sweat. It's in my eyes, dripping off my nose in fat drops that splash on the chopping block. I'm 2 pallets deep, and Gramps has 1. I keep at it. Axe goes up, axe comes crashing down. Wood's flying in all directions. I look over, and Gramps has abandoned the field. So I figure that's it. He's tapped out at 1.5 pallets. Even better than I thought. But he's back soon, and his axe is gleaming.
You probably want to go sharpen your blade, he says to me.
I just laughed. He was trying to get me to slow down, and I wasn't going to fall for it. The sun is baking us both, and the humidity is a crime against humanity. A punishment from God for the Garden of Eden, you know? But my pace is slowing. And to my surprise, Gramps is speeding up, because when I look back over, I see that he's finished his whole second pallet while I've been working on my third. He's almost caught up to me. So I start chopping faster, but he just heads back to the garage, and then he comes back, whistling his tune. I'm all in. Given it all I've got. My arms and back are burning, my shirt's off, and I've sweated through my shorts and underwear. Even my socks are soaked. Gramps is taking his time, toweling off his neck with a handkerchief he kept in his pocket. Whistling.
Reach looked at Alexa.
You know how many pallets I finished by the time Gran called us in for supper?
3.
3, Reach confirmed. Same as Gramps. Only his hands weren't blistered. His muscles weren't hardened knots, and he didn't have to drink a 0.5 gallon of Gatorade once we got inside.
Alexa paused as if considering.
What did your grandparents need wood for living in Florida?
Great question. The wood was still there after my grandparents died. I think Gramps just wanted me to know what hard work was like, the type he grew up doing.
Well, unlike then, this bit of work is not without a purpose. You will be optimally recovered in another 4 minutes, provided you properly hydrate.
Reach took a big drink from the water bladder he kept on his kit. He'd been drinking on the run and felt good about his levels, but Alexa's mentioning it made him feel thirsty all the same.
Tell me something, Reach said, swallowing the last trace of warm water. Did you and Doc turn me into a, well, cyborg?
That depends.
Depends on what? Either you made me into a Terminator or you didn't.
It depends on what your definition is of the term. If you mean having non-organic hardware symbiotically working with your physiology, then yes, you're a cyborg. You all are, thanks to the implants. But if you mean having muscle tissue and organs replaced with mechanical components, then no, you are not. You are still flesh and blood. It's just that the flesh and blood have been re-engineered to operate at previously impossible levels. And not just your muscles, your vision, your smell, your hearing. It's all been enhanced by a comprehensive algorithm that we programmed into your brain, working in conjunction with your implant.
Reach nodded, feeling relieved. He was still human.
How much farther? He asked Alexa.
Not long. Let's go.